Economics is the study of human choice in the world we live. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. By investigating faith in economics, we can learn how they lead to human flourishing. This is the Faith in Economics Podcast, a presentation of the Gortney Institute at Ottawa University.
Welcome to our show today, and I'm Cole McRae, producer and undergraduate scholar for the Gortney Institute. With us, we have today Dr. Russ McCullough, the founder of the Gortney Institute and Wayne Angel Chair of Economics, Dr. Justin Clark, the Menard Family Professor of Philosophy and Ethics, and Dr. Peter Jacobson, the Gortney Professor of Economic Education and Research. Finally, Kevin Ugarteche, producer and graduate assistant for the Gortney Institute.
Okay, so we want to talk about men and women today and relationships, and I don't know exactly where we're going with this, but my colleague, Dr. Jacobson, says there's been some turmoil out in the world regarding relationships of men and women, and I'm just going to let him take it from there.
Yeah, so as listeners know, I'm an expert on women. It's the obvious thing we should know. I do want to preface that, like, none of us, at least in terms of the professors here, are coming at this with firsthand experience. And what I mean by that is that this is a conversation that is mostly being had about younger generations than us. Like, it's mostly about like single young people and what it is like to find a relationship nowadays versus the past. That's part of it. And there's also, from that difficulty, people have claims that like gender relations in general have gotten worse, among some other things, right? And so to give the big setup, like one of the explanations that I have heard is like technology is a problem. And so the classic conversation goes something like this, or the classic explanation of what's gone wrong is something like this, that when you have dating apps, you have a lose-lose situation. And the reason is that like women are naturally attracted to like a very actually small segment of men. And when you're on a dating app, you have access to like millions of men, and so you have like the top 10% of those millions of men, if you're in a big city like New York City or something like that. And what this means is that like very few men are having relationships with very many women, sort of the result of this. And if you look at like the analytics on the app, this tends to be true, that like men like are accepted on their swipes like 10% of the time and women are accepted like 80% of the time. What that implies is like only a small percentage of men are matching with a very large percentage of women on these dating apps. And so like, as a result of this, like you have some problems. One, women have to have like this sort of hyper competition amongst themselves to appeal to men. And so like a lot of even feminists are saying like, this is actually like a really bad situation for women, because now a woman is competing with 100 other women for the same man. And that means, you know, she has to be willing to put up with stuff she otherwise wouldn't have to put up with, or be willing to compete in ways that she wouldn't be otherwise willing to compete. So that's one of the issues. The other issue is that as a result, like a lot of men apparently, and again, I'm just sort of like reporting what I've heard as general trends. We could talk about the extent that this is true. But men reportedly, on the other hand, you know, the 10% of men who get the matches are pretty happy with this arrangement. But the other 90% of men have a lot of resentment because of this, because they feel like, you know, no matter what I do, I can't find a woman. You know, I'll swipe some like 100 people on the app. No one wants to match with me. I must be like this miserable excuse for a man. And it like sort of spirals from there. Compared to, you know, imagine like 50 years ago what dating was like, where communities are pretty insular and there's 100 men in your community and 100 women in your community. 1 to 10 men can't actually have relationships with all 100 of the women. Why? Well, because like social stigmas, right? People hear about those relationships. Versus swiping in New York City, you know, you're not gonna like run into like two people who know each other and who can have a conversation. In fact, one of the outgrowths of this that has started to happen is like women will have, are you dating this man pages, where they'll post the people they think are their boyfriends and ask if anybody else is dating them, right? And so this is like one potential solution to this problem. But the point is, the claim is that this is breeding a lot of hostility between the genders, and hostility runs both ways. This is not like a men are victimized and they're angry, you know, or it's also not a women are victimized and they're angry. It's both at the same time. And so I wanted to kind of open this up for conversation. And there's other things at play here too, like work relationships, you know, some of this, like the backlash for Me Too stuff. We can get into that too. But the main developments, I think, in this conversation has been the what has happened because of apps.
So I want one point of clarification before we go too much further. when you're using the word match and getting, you know, turned down or not, are we talking about kind of longer term relationship match, like kind of in an ideal way, or are we talking a one night Tinder hookup?
Or even like on these dating apps, my understanding, I've never used any of them literally, but my understanding is that like you'll swipe on a person right or left. Left is I don't want to see this person anymore. I think right is like I want to match with this person. And if you both swipe right, then you're allowed to communicate. So the initiation of communication itself is the match.
Okay.
What they do from there,
there's
no clear data on what people do from there. Like the people try to create this data, but when I say like 10% of men get on like 100 swipes, one match, whereas, you know, women tend to get like 1-to-1 on their swipes and matches. That's what I mean.
Can I go way back for a second and say, I have my intuition on how this whole conversation kind of started. I'm going to say what I think mine is and see if it's the same as yours, is that there was data coming out showing something like the percentage of people under 20 who had, or the percentage of people in their 20s who were in what they considered to be a monogamous relationship, whether it's dating or married or whatever, has plummeted. And not only that, but the percentage of people who were under 20 who had done anything like been on a date had plummeted too. And since that data came out, people said something like, what is kind of going on? And then as an explanation for what's going on, one of the things that people picked up on was they said, well, let's look at what actually happens in the dating apps right now, because this seems to be where most relationships are beginning now.
Yeah. And that is true. That's where most relationships begin now. Yeah.
And that dating app explanation was proffered as an explanation for why this other thing happened, which is that it seems like relationships have between men and women of dating and matching or whatever age seem to not be forming at the rate they used to be forming. Is that like your intuition too? Like first we noticed that the relationships weren't forming and then we looked and said, oh, this is what's happening on the dating apps.
That's certainly the order that I heard things. Yeah, I don't know that I like could say for sure that's what happens, but I trust you if that's what you picked up on too, and that's my intuition. So.
And then you also said that the dating app explanation was one of a myriad of explanations that were being offered. And I take it what you're saying is the other explanations are also explanations for why coupling isn't happening at the same rate that it used to. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there a distinction here with the swiping apps more like Tinder, or unless they've all kind of evolved to this to some degree? But I'm thinking what I've seen of the swiping apps from some of my single friends is that it's all very physical. You're just looking at their looks, not anything else about them. Whereas the original dating apps is more of a full portfolio of I work for this, I do this or whatever. So I didn't know if part of what we're picking on is how it's evolved with the swiping style or the way it's done.
The stereotype is that men only look at the pictures. There are like, you can have like a short bio on a lot of these apps. And so like, I know that there is a whole like meta game that men engage in to have like really interesting bios or something. The thinking being that like women actually care about the bio.
Now we can ask AI probably to generate one.
Maybe. So it's like people try to like think of funny bios or bios that show off that they have a really good job, you know, things like that. But yeah, it's not like a whole portfolio sort of situation like the old dating websites, right? And those dating websites still exist, but like, yeah, the thing that is like, if you want to look at the single biggest trends in relationships amongst young people over the last 20 years, it's a movement from meeting at bars in college to meeting online and dating apps. College has plummeted. If you look at like the starts of relationships, where people say their relationships start, college has plummeted. It's still one of the top, but it's plummeted. Bars have plummeted. And exactly as those trends have like fallen, and they used to be the two biggest places, as those trends have fallen, internet has skyrocketed. Internet really is a proxy for dating apps. It's not like Match.com has suddenly gotten 50. I mean, it's gotten more popular, but it's not driving it. Yeah, it is a thing, right? Yeah, Farmers Only exists.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I guess how much of this has been, and the two might probably complement each other is my gut feeling, but the cultural acceptance of one night hookups and stuff today versus 20 years ago versus 40 years ago, more promiscuity with sex, and it's more acceptable. If that complimented the use of the development of the apps with the swipes, and then that is what's culturally an issue of not coupling.
So one of the claims here is, there's kind of two responses to this, is that for the median person, actually that stuff is decreasing for the median person. But one of the claims is that the increase in, like, you can find an increase in one night stands in the data. And what you have to look at is you have to look at the top 10% of men. And the argument is that actually these dating apps have increased one night stands, or women, the pressure on women to engage in one night stands, again, because of this competition thing that's happening, where women are competing for like this, these like few, whoever they are, a group of like, you know, very desirable men or whatever it is. And by the way, the thinking on that, again, whether you might disagree with this, the data is pretty clear on these dating apps that that's what's happening. You might disagree on the reason, but the reasons like range from economic to biological. But the simple idea is like, because women can end up with like a child from a relationship that she is bound to, she has like a pretty big investment in making sure that the person that she's in a relationship with is like successful. And so like, it's not even like a blameworthy thing, I don't think, that women are trying to get like these, whatever they interpret as these really good guys, because they're the ones who are like stuck with the full ramifications of their decisions when they choose to be in a relationship, whereas the thought is like, you know, men can pick up and leave, right? And whether or not that's right or wrong is a different question in terms of morality, but I think it's true generally in our society.
Yeah, the explanation from evolutionary biology is that women have been selected to be more selective in their choice of mate for that exact reason that you described, which is that they are the ones saddled with the child regardless. Whereas if men have a biological drive to procreate, they don't, that is independent of a biological drive to be a father, mm-hmm. right? And so traditionally, that has been the caricature of men and women in dating, is that women are more selective than men, and that men tend to be, you know, the caricature is like men tend to be the gas and women tend to be the brakes, right?
So what I'm hearing is we need to fight the inequality.
But the other thing that Peter talked about is that there's actually less sex being had. So it's not that people are more promiscuous. Like Peter said, the very, very top percentage of men, top being what the dating app ranks as top or whatever,
okay,
those people are having more sex. But on the whole, less sex is being had. And for the vast majority of people, less sex is being had. Those surveys show that, whether you think this is good or bad, kids between the ages of 16 and like 22 are having much less sex than previous generations were too.
Hmm.
And you can see why that would be the case, because to have sex, you kind of have to, as Peter said, match with somebody, right? Whether that's matching in a bar or matching on an app or whatever. But if match just means like, oh, I am open to having a relationship with this person and we're going to see where it goes. If that kind of reciprocal relationship can't form, relationships can't form either.
So we're not becoming culturally more pure. We're just going to blame a function on the app.
Yeah, but
you can make an argument that way, right?
Yeah.
We're becoming more religious and more...
The causal relationship doesn't seem to be that people have changed their morality. The causal relationship seems to be that people are unable to do something that they previously were able to do, which, like, we can imagine benefits from, certainly. Like, there's probably less, like, out-of-wedlock children happening, or if it's happening to fewer people, maybe, would be another way of putting it. So, like, we can imagine good results from it. But, yeah, it's not, like, some sort of, like, purity intentions or driving this or anything like that. What's driving it is, like, the change in technology has just eliminated this option for a lot of people, apparently.
All right, well, this looks like a good spot for a break. So when we come back, we'll learn how else it sounds like we got to fight the inequality of the one-night stand. Somehow, some way, fight inequality. All right, we'll be back in just a bit.
Ottawa University has an exciting new major, PPE, which stands for Philosophy, Politics, and Economics. Each of these three fields is interesting in their own right, but they intersect in ways that are important to understand, both individually and for your community. If you find philosophy fascinating, but want to make sure that your study of the subject is practical, If you enjoy economic analysis but want to see how economic laws interact with moral principles, if you are interested in politics but want to explore how economic and ethical realities constrain our political choices, you should consider the PPE program at Ottawa University.
The Gorton Institute at Ottawa University is the best place in the Midwest for free enterprise education and its contribution to human flourishing, faith and economics in action. We have some great high school student programs like PPE Fest. This is an event where students get to listen to some world-renowned speakers and then participate in competition geared around philosophy, politics, and economics. Our everyday economics program is just a half day on a Saturday, and we will have an integrated discussion about common sense economics. We have a college credit microeconomics course that runs every 8 weeks. Your high school student can earn college credit for the special price of $200. If you know some students interested in programs like these, contact Peter, Justin, or Russ today. All right, so we're back, and we've been talking about some sort of inequality among men. And so I was kind of slightly thinking this is some sort of fight against inequality if somehow, but the problem seems to be that these dating apps are a little biased towards some good-looking guy that has other attributes that look good, and maybe they're fake or not, but some 10%, those guys are having more of the matches, which is not necessarily a hookup one-night stand, but they make a match with somebody on the dating app to where they have some sort of communication, and that's really all sounds like the data we know. And so this is causing issues for the minority, or the majority rather, of other people who aren't getting the same number of matches. And so, and then we're the result being we're not having people together, the data showing, with people having these longer term relationships. I don't know if that's, we haven't really talked about tied to marriage, but marriage seems out the window anyway. So what, coupling maybe is the new thing of living together for a spousal equivalent or something. So I don't know. You guys beat me up. If that is that some sort of characterization? Did I miss some points?
Yeah. So I think essentially, like, that is an issue now, that it seems difficult for like those base relationships to form. But that is like something apparently a feeder cause, and Justin might come back to that, an ultimate disagreement of like whether or not it's the sole cause or the root cause. But it's a feeder cause of like these bad relationships between men and women. And so, again, apparently the narrative, if you like look up gender relations right now, is that they're like at historic lows. That's what like news articles will say, is gender relationships are at historic lows between men and women. Two other driving claims. So technology is maybe the biggest one I've heard, but two other driving claims, both of which I think have some sort of merit, and they're somewhat related. The first one, less related, is that politically men and women are increasingly polarized. That is, like, young men tend to be relatively conservative, especially like middle class men, not upper middle class, but like middle class men have become more conservative, whereas women, middle class to upper middle class, especially like upper middle class women, have become increasingly liberal politically. And, you know, we can see this in, like, you know, Donald Trump in 2016 versus 2020. What changed? Well, it was suburban women voted for Joe Biden the second time. They voted for Trump the first time, but they voted for Biden the second time. And so the thought is, like, politically, women and men have been driven apart in an age where actually like politics sort of is the new religion in dating, where like it used to be you wouldn't date people outside of your religion. Religion is relatively unimportant to most people now, at least by their own calculations, and politics has taken its place. And so now, like, you can find studies, whether or not this is true is a different question. You can find surveys, though, of like women who would say, oh, I would never date a conservative or a Trump supporter or anything like that. Yeah. And when men are increasingly becoming conservative, you know, certain groups of men, it's obviously not men across the board, though I do think on average they are. That obviously creates its own issue. One last issue that's related to this idea of like the top percentage of men, whatever that would be, is men are increasingly leaving the standard school system. And so men are becoming less college educated. They're pursuing less master's degrees, less doctorate degrees, and instead like taking a degree in high school, whereas women are doing the opposite. The trend right now for women is that they're going to college more often. They're getting more graduate degrees. And it seems to be the case in the data right now that women do not date and marry less educated men. Like, that seems to be the case. Now, that's not maybe a permanent fixture. This could be a moment in our time. But it makes sense in, like, the world that we live in today that a lot of people view, like, success as some relationship with, like, you know, whether or not you can earn enough money or specifically earn more money than me. And if a woman has a master's degree, there's actually very few men relatively who can earn more money than her, right? And so this is another claimed issue, is that like because women are increasingly becoming more educated, and at least in relative terms, men are becoming less educated, doing less well in school, this creates ultimately an earnings gap between men and women don't like to stoop down below where they're at because they're more selective. Again, these are narratives. I'm sure there's data that can show like maybe these arguments are less solid. So I'm not saying with 100% certainty that I believe all these things. I'm only presenting what's generally said.
And it's I don't think it's merely an earnings gap. It's also a status gap.
Yeah, that's part of it too.
Men, I think, are happy to take a job that pays well, even if it doesn't have status. Whereas it seems like as Peter's saying, this is what the data shows, that women won't go below, on average, like will, on average, don't want to date anyone below their status level with it, and where education counts as status more now than maybe income did or does. And, you know, I'd advise the readers to go look at what Peter's talking about when he's talking about the trends in terms of the sex differentials in the distribution of things like master's degrees and undergraduate degrees.
Well, it's interesting that impact might tie into what you were just saying with men are more concerned about money. The rate of return of getting a master's degree probably went down with the influx of women getting their master's degree.
Why was that?
So why was what?
Why would the rate of return go down when women got in?
Because it increased the supply.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, of degrees. So if we have an influx of master's level educated people, that would tend to level out, or the, you know, back in the day, a master's degree 20, 30 years ago was a decent jump in pay. And if men are more money motivated and that's not there at the margin, then maybe that's part of the result we're seeing.
If men are on the margin of deciding to get a degree and then the supply of degree holders goes up because people enter the market, of course people are going to drop out, right? Like this isn't a shock to anybody that men have started to leave education and women have started to come in. I do think one shocking thing has been that men are also doing worse while men are leaving, which you would expect the opposite, right? You would expect that people would do on average better as the marginal people leave, because the marginal people are the people who like maybe couldn't have made it through or something like that. So it's actually kind of even scarier than like the obvious economic explanation. It seems like men are on average just not as suited as education as they used to be for whatever reason, whether that's education changes or changes in men. I don't know. Probably its own podcast there. But yeah, I think like all of these things are given. And the result of this is that apparently like men and women like have real difficulty communicating with each other. Or, you know, if you go into the terminally online circles of conservative Twitter, you'll see like a lot of like fights about like you'll have like men saying like, oh, you know, women are like the source of problems. And, you know, women will say, well, we always get blamed for everything by conservative men. And so like there's a lot of like these struggles in explicit gender terms that people are at least saying, like, if you think back to the George Bush era, how much did we talk about how men and women are ruining each other's lives? Like, maybe that was happening. I don't remember it. I was pretty young, but I don't remember it at all. Seems like a lot of identity conflicts that have started to reemerge, that this is one that has started to reemerge again.
Can I just make a pitch too? Like, I think it's easy for people like us to say, like, we were already married, and so this doesn't really affect us. But a worsening, if it is true that there's this bad, that relations between the sexes have deteriorated, like that's really, really, really bad for society, regardless of whether you're already married or not. The two-parent household is like the foundation of a stable society. And when you have a society that, for whatever reason, makes it very difficult for that to happen, that society's in trouble. And so trying to figure out what's actually going on would be useful here. Russ just got married, right?
But he just got married.
Peter has daughters.
Hope to have plenty of grandkids is the plan. You know, I think, and of course, a lot of people would challenge you on that statement to say, well, where is the data? And I think society's better off by not having these norms of the traditional male-female household.
But the problem is like the
data is there though.
That's why I wanted you to
two parent household do way better than the outcomes kids raised are better by a single parent.
And gender roles aren't going away as you're eliminating this. Like, they're actually in some ways getting worse, because, again, what's happening is, because women are more selective on average, and that exists still, like that still happens, they are increasingly fighting over fewer men. And then again, the argument is that makes women have to, like, basically it's moving from a buyer's market to a seller's market, right? Or something like that, mm-hmm. where now they have to increasingly compete in ways that make them uncomfortable, which, yeah, is like a dad of daughters, like, the dating scene to me to at this moment, like, I would be very, like, worried if my daughters were on that scene now, because, like, so many people are eliminated just by virtue of, like, the expectations that men would have of them on, like, you know, if you go out on the first date with me and you're not going to make out with me, it's probably worse than that. I don't know what the norms are anymore. I'm an old codger or whatever, but, like, you just have so many options immediately eliminated based on those expectations that have now been formed, that it seems like a really bad place to try to find someone to be with permanently. So
yeah, as the father of sons, I think I feel the exact same way, but in the opposite, you know, like, yeah. Oh, how many opportunities to meet somebody interesting are just going to be removed because, yeah. You know, someone gets eliminated before you can actually meet them.
Yeah.
There's a good video that I show usually, I think every time, with microeconomics, even online and otherwise, called The Economics of Sex. And I think the video is like 10 to 15 years. So it wasn't so much on swiping, but how things have evolved over time and kind of the shift in the buyers and sellers market of traditionally, now you have to go back, maybe back to the 1950s and 60s, of women kind of held the power because the men were interested in sex and women kind of were the gatekeepers to that, and how that's changed over time culturally and shifted the power structure. And I think that's a little bit of what we're touching on here, that the power structure has changed again, maybe from when this video was made, and it might not be moving a good direction.
And to clarify, and I know I've said this before, but just to highlight, it's not shifted from women to men. It shifted from women to a very small percentage of men. And that's an important clarification, because it's really easy to hear this and think, oh, women are causing this problem, right? And it's not women that are causing the problem. They're not, or women are, like, being affected by this problem. They've lost the power and it's gone to the men. Sorry, I've got that backwards. That, like, men have stolen the power in relationships from women. That's what you could take away. But again, it's not all men. It's like a very small percentage of men that have, like, taken that power. It's almost like we've got a few mega corporations now in our dating world or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I guess we should move, just like on the basis of time, to, like, I think Justin doesn't think that any of these things are the root cause based on what he, or maybe one of these things has been. But I'm curious what you think is the root cause, and Russ too, and what the solutions are, if any.
During the break, I said that I don't think this was the root cause. And I think maybe you guys think that I think I know what the root cause is. I don't.
Okay.
In that same survey that asks, you know, young people what they're doing and, you know, that caused this alarm, like, hey, young people aren't dating anymore. This might be a problem. Why is it? Well, let's look at the dating apps, blah, blah, blah. That same survey revealed that it's not just dating that has plummeted. Things like having a driver's license, being able to drive a car, having a job, doing things outside your house, all these things have gone way down.
The unplugging of America.
And I think that that's just as big of a problem as the fact that people aren't dating anymore. And maybe maybe that could be driving part of that problem too. I know when I was a kid, you know, how do you end up dating somebody? Well, I mean, one of the ways you do it is you and your buddies go and you get in a car and you go pick up some friends and you go do stuff outside your house. Or you have a job in high school that's outside your school. And, you know, it goes all the way back to kids that are between like 3 and 6 years old, where if you look now, none of them engage in unsupervised play.
Yeah.
And so, it's tough to say, like, oh, the reason kids aren't engaging in unsupervised play anymore is because of Tinder, you know?
Yeah.
So it just seems like they're like the entire, all facets of this society are moving in this direction. And I'm not sure what's causing it. I'm sure, you know, the internet is causing some of it. I don't know how much of it, but every single one of these trends seems bad. Some of them are good, right? So like, the amount of kids that have drank alcohol has gone way down, right? Mm-hmm. And that can be good or bad, depending on how you think,
Or a lot of relationships used... started though with
exactly. Alcohol.
Right, so.
And ended.
Yeah. And ended. Yeah. We're,
yeah.
It's an empirical question. We'll but it's
so like these behaviors are changing on this massive scale, and I don't know whether just like, oh, if we fix the dating part of it, it'll be fixed, or it's just like, well, society's really changing in this way that maybe we don't have a grasp on right now.
Well, okay, so yeah, you made me think of the kids getting kind of liberated or feeling independent when they get that first phone, replace the car. Back in the day, when you turned 16 or 15 or what, you know, whatever the state law was, and you got that car, all of a sudden, I can drive anywhere, right? And you're kind of independent. And I heard that shifted to younger ages, that the reason they didn't care as much about the car is because they got the phone, and the phone created that sense of independence of, I can take myself anywhere in the world with this thing, right? And communicate with people all over the globe, whether that's video gaming and other things, there's this kind of sense of independence. And then through continued use on the screen and social media wanting to keep you on the screen, and it's obviously led to a reduction in physical relationships, which then gets us back to what is dating all about and coupling. It's creating a physical relationship. So that kind of makes sense, I guess, of where we're at. That's not a solution. It's just,
I think it's a real bait and switch though, to switch the car for the phone.
Yeah,
in that, totally. You know, when I was 16, I mean, I don't really want to get into what we did in our cars, but we would go, we would go jump them, you know, we would almost kill ourselves.
Yeah.
And if you're going out there in a car and doing stuff on your own, that's a kind of freedom where if you go and do stuff out there and you make some mistakes, you can just go home and that's the end of it. If you make a mistake online, you can be held accountable. You know, the kids are going to be filming it or whatever. It's more like now everything I do can be tracked or it can be logged. It's this kind of like entrance into this weird ecosystem that sells itself as a kind of freedom, but is really, you know,
it's your bowling alley with like bumpers up. It's like, yeah, you're never going to get a gutter ball. You also probably won't get very good at bowling either. If you remove the lanes, you're going to be trying to bounce them off the bumper still.
So. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to pose that maybe this is a temporary situation, and here's my reasoning. If there is a true gap that's an observable problem where people aren't finding the right matches, it seems like a profitable opportunity for some entrepreneur to bring back something that substitutes what's missing, if it's valuable to people. We're screwed if it's not valuable to people anymore, but if it is valuable to people, then that should be a gap that should be filled, would be my economic long-term process here of free markets and free enterprise, is that the gap would be filled eventually with some new substitute that maybe brings back the driving and physicality or something else. I don't know what that is, but.
Yeah, I find it unlikely that the genie will go back in the bottle in a society-wide way here. And one of the like things that people I think get wrong is sometimes when they're proposing societal fixes to this issue is they target a specific sex and they tell them like, oh, you have to fix things. And so like one thing you'll hear men say is like, women need to lower their standards. Like, this is one solution. Stop matching with the top 10%, like settle for less.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think this is a fair expectation of women, because I don't think it's like blameworthy that women want to be with a man that they think is going to be successful, is going to provide for them well, you know, is going to like match their success at least. Like, I don't think that's a blameworthy thing. I don't think it'd be blameworthy if it was the other way either, but I don't think it's like particularly blameworthy here. And then like another comment is made like, well, men need to fix this and men need to fix this by getting better. Like, you just need to like be better. The problem with this is like, even if like men improve, there is still like 10% top, like according to whatever metric, you know, if we all go to the gym and get really buff, I actually think this is an overrated way to attract a mate. But if we all do that, like there's still going to be a buffest guy, right? And then there's just going to be degrees of less. And, you know, even if the weakest guy benches, you know, 160 or something, he's still the weakest guy, right? Now, on a practical solution, I'm about to turn around and do exactly the opposite of what I said. In a practical solution, I don't think I have a society-wide solution here that's easy or like specific, but I think like my practical level solution for men at least is to do exactly what I said that we shouldn't recommend, which is that I don't think we can fix this problem by all men improving, but I think men can fix their or improve their own odds by sort of A, not caring if you find someone, which is like a very difficult thing to do. And maybe in principle, when you're a teenager, impossible.
Yeah.
But B, like doing the things that like would make your life good, even if you were not with someone. And so like, you have to imagine what would a good single life look like. And again, if you're like trying to find someone, you hope that you don't have that. But what would a good single life look like? And what can I do to make that happen regardless, right? So pursuing hobbies, having a career that you find fulfilling, you know, getting the proper level of education for what you need, like those sorts of things, I think incidentally make men attractive, like the desire to like improve themselves on several margins, regardless of what people think, is actually, I think, one of the like primary features that's looked for. This is kind of like a chicken and egg thing, because once you start doing it for that purpose, like it becomes its own thing. But like that, I think that's the only like recommendation I have for men right now is like, you know, imagine like the what would you want anyways, like the and think about pursuing that. And I think that's a hard thing to do. But in order to fix the problem, like totally, I mean, the only like small scale solution that I can see to this is like developing like spaces and communities that are like somewhat halfway insular, so you're not like playing the society-wide matching game that seems to have this bad result. Like people used to value things that mattered as being barriers, right? And so like the barriers now seem to be like political. Like if someone's a Republican or someone's a Democrat, I don't want to date them. But it used to be something like, well, if someone accepts the same ultimate truth that I do, then they're a possible candidate, right? Like I select out everybody who has a fundamental disagreement on the nature of what it is to be good or something like that. And even if people wouldn't put it that way, that's sort of what you're doing when you're sorting by religion, is saying like, we have to agree on what we agree is the most important thing. And I think just moving back to a system where people do that like helps ameliorate a lot of this issue. Because again, like part of the problem is we're playing this society-wide matching game where the selected features, like they tend to be superficial both ways. Men tend to focus on appearance. Women tend to focus on like job success. But what does that mean? It's like a high-paying job with like maybe a useless title in some tech company or a business wing of a tech company that's a California company, but the business wing is located on the East Coast somewhere. Like, I don't know. It seems like the things that are selected for right now aren't very good. And I don't think that that is a problem with the selectors. I think it's a problem with our culture and that we don't have a very good handle in our culture on what is good. So that's like not a very tractable solution. So I tried to offer a tractable solution, at least for men, and then a solution that like is actually very hard to be tractable, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think my advice to men would be probably delete most of your social media accounts and get a job or go to church and or both. And I'll just say like from experience, the two like longest, most successful relationships I've had were with people that I actually met at work. And I thought they were cute from the get-go, but I don't think they liked me until they worked with me for a while. And
that sounds like my wife too, when I met her in calculus class.
Yeah. I think that when you have a social media page or something like that, where you list all of your beliefs, what you're really doing is just saying something like, hey, are these a red flag to anybody? Like if any of these are deal breakers, then just immediately don't consider me. Right. And as someone who is kind of a weirdo and thinks a lot of weird things, in both of those relationships, you know, I entered, those families thought that a lot of my beliefs were very weird. And those people who, you know, who ended up dating and, you know, ended up marrying one, they initially disagreed with me about a bunch of things. And, you know, I think that if you're able to reveal yourself incrementally to somebody rather than saying like, hey, look, here's everything about me.
Yeah.
Almost everybody's pretty weird, right? And one of the things that social media encourages you to do is kind of be dishonest about who you are.
Yeah.
And that ends up resulting in matches that really aren't going to work out in the right way, because they start off by you're kind of falsifying yourself.
Yeah. And it doesn't do anything to the weight of those attributes at all. And so you might have one attribute that way overcomes a couple of these negative things. And it's like, oh, even though you're not, or even though you're a Republican or something, gosh, you are the sweetest guy, you know, whatever. there's nothing with the waiting. And so I think that's a really big insight you're creating barriers by throwing up profile or potential barriers by throwing up the profile rather than the reality of the complexity of the human being and their experiences and who you are as a person is a lot of tacit information, and it needs to be incrementally revealed in the right way, time and place.
Yeah.
Not only like, oh, he believes this politically, maybe I can overlook that, but no, oh my gosh, I've been working with this person for a long time. You know, we've started in conversation, they revealed to me that they thought this, I didn't think so. Not maybe I can overlook it, but maybe I should actually have a talk with somebody about this.
Yeah.
This is somebody that I like. I didn't realize that people who disagreed with me on this issue, I liked so much.
To me, chemistry cannot be denied. And so that's what's missing out of the swiping and the profiling. There's something of the face-to-face experience and more time spent with the person. I've had multiple people tell me that they thought I was an a-hole when they first met me. And then once they got to know me, they learned I was a pretty cool guy.
I like trust when I first met him. I think it's a really good point, Justin. If you're a listener who is with someone, this is a fun thought experiment, which I've been mentally running in my head since Justin brought it up. Is like, if I had labeled myself like particular ways on a profile, would my current wife have swiped right or left on me? Right. I think the answer is she would have swiped left. I don't think I would have ever met her. Because I politically at the time, I was like very proud of saying like, oh, I'm an anarchist. And it's like, my wife doesn't want anything to do with an anarchist. Like, are you joking me? She's like, she could care less about like, that philosophical anarchism that I was so interested in. And that would sound like a huge red flag to anybody listening, because it's like, anarchist, you think of the guy in black with a Molotov cocktail running around, or like some guy with a sign yelling, which is like very stupid behavior. And so it's like it's a really good point, I think, that like you're sort of like setting yourself up to lose a decent chunk of the time, not only because, by the way, I think those apps already have a culture that you're set up to lose, even if you win. Yeah. That's a total other problem. But yeah, I agree. It's like I can construct a picture of myself that no one would want to date. And like I might I don't know what's desirable, so I might accidentally do that to myself if it's in my power, right? I think it's a good point.
Yeah.
I still haven't shown my wife my Molotov cocktails.
All right. Well, that looks like a good place to wrap. I think the takeaway here is to either, like you said, absolutely delete your media account or apps that you're in, or maybe a little bit of advice would be to be a minimalist and like don't list a laundry list of a whole bunch of things. Keep it real simple, maybe, or the simpler the better if you must have a profile. We'd be reducing the barriers. So either delete or, I don't know, that was my little takeaway, that maybe we don't want to write the laundry list of things we think we are that are important to us, but rather keep it minimal and maybe you'll have better luck in the dating scene. So, all right. Well, this has been a production of the Gortney Institute here at Ottawa University. I'd like to thank you all for listening. 5-star rating helps other people find us. Otherwise, pass this along to your friends and family that might like to take a listen. Other than that, be fruitful and multiply. Thanks.